Sir Waymar Royce was the youngest son of an ancient house with too many heirs. He was a handsome youth of 18, gray-eyed and graceful and slender as a knife. Mounted on his huge black destrier, the knight towered above Will and Garrett on their smaller garrons. He wore black leather boots, black woolen pants, black moleskin gloves, and a fine supple coat of gleaming black ringmail over layers of black wool and boiled leather. Sir Waymar had been a sworn brother of the Night's Watch for less than half a year, but no one can say he had not prepared for his vocation. At least insofar as his wardrobe was concerned. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it was best to rename and rebrand ourselves as the game did so with the second edition. Now, we are the White Book Podcast, and each week we bring you your dose of strategy, insight, and all-around geeky goodness. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, but more importantly to you, our listeners. Please consider supporting us on Patreon so that we can continue to make this show the best it can, and I promise we have big plans for the future. This is The White Book. Welcome back to The White Book, where we're going to tackle some really, really important questions. Which I promise...
Why do we pretend we cared about Sir Waymar for the intro?
Oh, no, because I was about to say, I promise I will connect that quote to the questions. I've added a number 11 that I'm going to spring on you guys that I thought of late in the game. So I've got to connect.
This feels like gotcha journalism. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be great.
I think it's cute that he thinks I've read any of those questions. Man, you're going to catch me unprepared.
That was a two-hour podcast. You were totally making that up.
I read like two questions, and I assumed I was like, oh, Roy and I disagree on these. We're going to fight about that, and now Roy's not on it. None of that matters. Here we are.
Oh, okay. I was the backup. Gotcha. All right, cool. I'm cool with that. I can live with that.
Yeah. Sorry that you had to find out that way, but I figured that asking you an hour before recording time kind of telegraphed it anyway.
Yeah, just a little bit. That's okay, though. I can live with that.
Okay.
I mean, good, because if you can't, this is going to suddenly be awkward when you hang up.
Well, dear listeners, obviously I'm Will, and you definitely recognize my long-term co-host. In fact, I think at this point, longest term other than myself, right, Aaron?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, does Kyle count because he barely exists?
He left and then came back, so we're not counting his hiatus. Yeah. We're not counting that.
Since I continue to do every single episode during my hiatus, yeah, I should count.
Yeah, exactly. And we're joined by Dustin, who listeners have heard on the show before. You may recognize him as the reigning U.S. champion, so well done.
Hello.
And then he said we lost Will, but Dustin won that Will's tournament. National.
Will lost that tournament. Is that connected?
I mean, if you didn't lose that tournament,
sure,
he couldn't have won.
It's true. Well, there were three tournaments that
no,
weekend.
There were. You think there were other tournaments, but you'd be wrong.
There was only one that mattered, and Tommy won that one. Thank goodness.
This is right.
And that's how we know you're lying, because Tommy's never won anything that mattered.
Oh!
Ouch.
He's not even here to defend himself.
Well, that's what happens when you drop the podcast. You get roasted.
Well, okay. Tell you what, I'm going to segue this away from beating up on people who aren't here to defend themselves and formats of the game that are
my love. So instead, we are going to go ahead and throw out our Patreon prize for the week. This one I'm super excited about. I've already remembered to go ahead and do the random drawing here. So I can say that Sam W. has already won these. Turns out, folks, those extra entries you get for supporting us with higher dollar amounts pay off with extra chances. So what it is that you've won, though, are these really freaking sweet White Book house cards, courtesy of Throne's favorite graphics guru, Mike. And these are just awesome. Dual-sided, kind of grayscale and white. There'll be pictures on Facebook and probably on the podcast website as well, so other folks can check them out. But we'll have a few sets of these to give out. I'm super excited about them. So if you've been on the fence about supporting us, get in for at least a dollar so you've got a shot at a couple more sets of these. So,
you know how else you could have gotten Mike exclusive promos?
How's that?
You can be on Team Martell for Thronestoberfest.
Ooh.
Because Team Martell has our own privately produced Mike house cards and playmats.
And playmats.
That no one on Earth but the two of us have seen.
Nice. Well, I'm looking
so
forward to
seeing. They will be live by the time this episode goes up. So like we're gonna pretend we haven't as mentioned. So you guys should just click around the site looking for an as mentioned to find the link.
For sure.
Oh, we'll stick it on the Patreon page. Even better. That's a real thing we actually have.
See? There we go. There we go. You just have to shoot it to me so we can do that.
Remind me. I will be free.
Okay, that's fair. All right, so after that, let's get into the meat and potatoes of our episode for this week. The reason we have Aaron on, who only cares about the competitive aspect of the game, and Dustin, who quite frankly has too many hours to test and not enough hours of sleep. But it pays off. Obviously, it pays off.
No idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
They didn't pay off the Thrones War.
That doesn't count. It was Team Stark in February.
I was about to say, Stark worked out well for you not long ago.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, the difference of 7 months.
Oh, literally, at least one great card per pack.
Right, exactly. I mean, we're talking, we got I Am No One, we got Great John, we got just so many things between then and now. Wyman, of course, you know, Umber Loyalists, there's so many things.
Let's also start with, we did a chapter pack review, I think, last time I was on. Definitely yes. Wrong about Skagos, that shit's busted.
Skagos is great.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, that shit is just real, real good.
I hear On Demand Sacrifice is really good.
Yeah, and like it's got so many like little stupid tricks.
Oh yeah.
I don't know why everyone suddenly has tricks except Martell, which literally has cards that say you can't play your tricks. But here we are.
And Martell's got some interesting stuff up their sleeves now.
Like what? Because they can't play King Flood. And now everyone's playing six.
Hold on, you guys are jumping too far ahead.
And now everyone's playing 6-1-1, and I'm just sitting there like
When it was just talking about Skagos, it was fine. But now we're all out of order, guys. Come on. All
right, we'll get there. We'll get there.
Let's pretend we're in order. Ask us a question.
Yeah, pretend. Okay, so here's the deal, listeners. We are talking Worlds preparation because this should be the last episode to come out prior to Worlds weekend. So we're chatting a little bit. We're changing up the format a little bit this time as well. We're making it a little more... shall we say, talk showy? I've got a list of 10, now 11 questions that I'm going to be fielding, and we're going to let our two experts in the field, as it were, kind of tackle these and give us their opinions on what's going on. So, before we begin, though, I do have an important additional question for the two of you. Would you like me to start with the question 11 that I added at the last second, or end with question 11?
I mean, I think you should end with it. That's gotcha journalism, you know, at its core, right?
There we go. We'll just spring it on you while you're looking the other direction. I love it.
There you go.
Okay, so.
It sounded like Aaron was going to say you should do it now.
It did not. Aaron was going to say, you could tell me it's the first question or the last question. I will never know the difference.
He'd have no idea.
He'd have no idea. You're like, hey, guess what? I did it fourth. Like, cool, great. Want a cookie? Do it when you're comfortable.
Okay, so I've got these kind of broken into some topically related chunks here. And I'm sure we're going to hit on some follow-up questions and things as we go. But to start with this first one, I know we're going to have to fudge it a little bit for Aaron. So this might be hypothetical. You may have to talk about what you did for past years. But I know this is one that Dustin is going to be all over. So here's the question. How many games would you say you've played lately in preparation for Worlds?
Oh, I don't have to fudge that. Did the long glances break up while I wasn't looking?
Okay, so you're still playtesting even though you're not attending that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, good. Well, how many would you ask?
So,
I don't know, 3 to 5 a night for the past 3 to 4 weeks. But, like, I've also had to, like, it's super duper extra, well, weekdays, weekends I've been drinking and such. But, unfortunately, Roy scheduled Fronstoberfest at literally the most obnoxious time humanly possible. So I've had to play 3 million Martell games also. So, like, it's hard to separate the two because, like, I sort of just let people beat up on my Martell deck so we can see how decks work for a while.
Okay.
But I would assume I've played at least 60-ish games.
Okay.
Well, you know what Roy's plan was there, right, Glazer? I mean, what he did is he put Thronestoberfest right there in the middle of Worlds prep season so that he can sandbag for Thronestoberfest and then swoop in for Worlds.
He's not that clever. Zero chance.
No, I'm just joking. But...
Well, what
all,
about you?
All he did was distract his most like heavy playtesters. Me and Jesse have been playing so much of our own houses. He's like, John's like, who wants to play me? And we're like, sorry, I've got to play X, Y, and Z 800 times.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you're Storm Bros, right?
Yeah, Storm Bros.
So we
yeah.
haven't really screwed you guys too bad, right?
We haven't been, I have not been assisting, in the Thronestoberfest testing. So I haven't been involved in that at all, mainly because, you know, Team Lannister is anyway. So yeah,
I hope so. If there's ever a team that deserved to be, right? Okay. So how many games have you prepped?
So this is going to sound funny because I've talked a number of times about how I play about 20 hours a week, but I have not been testing hardly at all.
Oh, wow.
The entire month of September after Nationals, I pretty much took a break, and then I got horribly, horribly ill for about 2 weeks at the end of September through the beginning of October. I was laid up for about 4 days straight. I have been down with bronchitis. I just finished my course of antibiotics for that. So, yeah, I was in a rough way. So I've been sleeping. I've actually been sleeping, guys. It's amazing. Did you know that if you sleep 8 hours a night, you feel really good the next
you
day?
You feel so much better.
I've got a 2-year-old. How would I know that?
Yeah, right. Well, and me habitually, I've slept, you know, 5 to 6 hours a night since I was about 12. So that's, you know, normal for me. But over the last couple of weeks, I've actually been sleeping more than I ever have. This weekend, I slept 8 hours a night, 3 nights in a row. I decided I'm going to actually try and keep doing that. So that may cause me problems for Worlds. I don't know. We'll see. But in the last week or so, I've actually gotten some testing in. Me and Andros, we have a pretty common testing routine, and where he complains and says everything's and we're going to lose and he's never going to play again. And then he finds a deck that he enjoys, tests it 10 times. Then we break it and we go, okay, that's not going to work. And then he goes through that thing again. And then we find something that we really like. And now we're finally set on a house. And so we're you'll find out at Worlds.
I won't be there.
Yeah, well, you'll find out at Worlds when you're not there.
That's confusing English.
you'll see me on stream.
I am totally not spending that weekend watching the stream.
Sorry. What? Yeah, what are you going to do instead?
I think my wife's actually going away, so I will be sitting alone with a two-year-old, and I don't think he's going to be down with that.
Yeah, probably not.
Have two screens on, you know? Have the screen on TV where he can watch, you know, whatever kids watch now, Dora the Explorer still, no? Kailu?
I don't know what Kailu is.
And then you can watch on another screen. But no, I've been getting some testing in finally, doing as much as I can with that. I've got D&D two nights a week, so that takes a good chunk of time. Yeah. And, October in general, October is just a busy month, man. We've got something going on every single weekend. Like there's a Texas Renaissance Festival is huge down here. We're doing that two different weekends. It's busy. Plus being sick, so maybe 20 games in total I've tested since the new restricted list came out. That might be about it.
Okay, well, I mean, in some ways, you guys kind of already have answered my second question, so I'm going to modify it a little bit and just kind of ask, in general, when you're prepping for big events like Worlds, about how far out do you ideally start in on that? I think, or at least I would think, that the monthly chapter pack releases can kind of mess with trying to get too much of a lead, don't they?
A pack out from the last, like, a pack before, so that there's only one more pack before the actual big tournament. But, I mean, the issue is really that, like, they dropped a restricted list on us also this time without real warning. That didn't make a lot of the top decks, I mean, besides Terrell, I guess, that didn't make a lot of the top decks work worse, but just shifted things slightly to the left in a really annoying way.
Changed them around, yeah. Made certain strategies a little bit more viable and certain strategies just a little less useful. You know, start crossing, you know, you can't really run the, make it as resilient as you used to as far as the breaking ties aspect of it, but so you just instead make it a little bit more rushy or something like that.
I think it hurt card crossing a fair bit too.
What's that?
I think it hurt card crossing a fair bit too.
Right.
Those are the two decks that were really just like, oh, I wanted my breaking ties.
Yeah. And now they don't have that resilience. Yeah. But
whatever. They could probably have used that kickback. Like, I don't think the meta is in any way in a bad place. I don't think it's super, like, it's not decks I enjoy playing, but I don't think it's in a bad place.
I don't think so either. So as far as how far out I start testing, usually it's about a month or so. I mean, realistically, I don't stop playing. I'm just kind of constantly playing about 20 hours a week. So, or at least I was before I started learning that sleep is beneficial. So, yeah. So, but typically it's about a month out. And I was, like I said, I was sick. Restricted list came out. I was still a little sick, but I was really glad I hadn't spent a ton of time practicing with a pre-restricted list because I was kind of leaning towards Tyrell at the time. And when that came out, I'm like, okay, well, not what I was planning on. So we'll change that up. And, you know, yeah, typically about a month out and I start getting really serious.
Okay. Well, okay. So here's kind of a follow-up one that might be a little contentious then. I'm curious, do you guys feel that when it really comes down to it for events of kind of this size or nature, you know, your Stalics, your Continentals, Worlds, and that sort of thing, that playtesters have an advantage in preparing for those by knowing that card pool beforehand?
I mean, sure, but, like, I'm assuming that most people would be test, like, for, to the best of my knowledge, there's very few, like, besides, like, SoCal, there aren't really that many people that play in person anymore. Like, knowing they're coming and not on Iron Throne, I would imagine, is not super useful.
I think the only thing that the main thing that playtesters probably get is just that concept of theory crafting. They're able to see what decks might exist in a new meta coming up. They could see, you know, okay, I see how this combo can work with this. I see how this can work with this. You know, they get a little forewarning. I think that's kind of just a given as a, you know, concept of what's coming. And they have some more time to think about it. But I mean, I think, you know, as soon as a pack drops, if you've been doing a lot of theory crafting in general, if you're pretty good at deck building, or you're just practiced at it, you're going to see a lot of that stuff pretty quickly. And also, things get shared so fast as far as concepts for decks right now. Mm-hmm. Through the Online Thrones community, people find out within a week or two of some sort of combination that you may not have heard of. So.
Yeah, if you're still in the big Facebook group, you're probably making a mistake as far as like keeping up with the strategy as soon as possible, because like the instant something breaks, the Game of Thrones LCG community page is talking about it, like literally the instant.
Yeah.
Well, and just to throw things out there, if I can draw it back to when I was playtesting way back in First Ed, like. Due to the lead time in production on this sort of stuff, like you're testing a set before, like a year before it comes out, a lot of times, give or take a few months, and trying to, you know, if you're also a competitive player, you're trying to drop back into the current like card pool and stay on top of like cutting edge developments and deck tech when, you know, the much wider field of players is running through iterations a lot faster than a small pool of testers. And like, then you're trying to get back in that other headspace when those cards finally release, you know, 6, 9, 12 months down the road from when you looked at those before. Like I honestly did not feel like it was a boon in First Ed at all. It was such a different gear to be moving back and forth between.
Well, and I've heard, actually, I remember hearing that from a couple of playtesters where they were basically saying, oh, they were thinking about cards that hadn't been released yet and thinking that might be in a deck I was playing. And I was just like, nope, not a thing.
Oh, so, ouch. That's awkward.
Yeah. So sometimes I have heard of a couple of playtesters forgetting occasionally that, oh, yes, that card does not actually exist yet. So.
Okay, well, let's turn it back to stuff that does exist, and this is stuff that actually my first question on the field at large here is something that both of you guys were actually dipping a toe into just a moment ago, because my question number one is basically, okay, so here's the time period I was looking at on the annals. I was looking at from U.S. Nationals to now, so that we had a, you know, a reasonable scope of tournaments. I know we've had some pack releases in the middle and the restricted list and such, so it's not exactly the same field, but it's pretty recent. So out of that, Stark plus Targaryen covers a full 50% of all tournament wins and 48% of cuts, which is pretty impressive. Though they together only cover 34% of the field. But that overall gives them almost the only positive qualification ratios right now. Almost half for Targ and 0.28 for Stark. Like, do you expect that kind of just heavy dominance to continue? Or did something like the restricted list dial them back enough in resiliency, like you were talking, to break that up some?
No, I think we're still going to see that for Worlds, absolutely.
I think there's one new house. I think there's one new contender that changes things, but I think there's only three houses that matter for Worlds.
When you say one new house, do you mean Free Folk?
No.
Because that's a new house.
I guess, sure, but there's one new thing that matters for Worlds. Anyone want to try?
I don't know. Is it my next question?
Is it Greyjoy?
Yeah, is it the only other house with a positive ratio right now?
Greyjoy.
If you'd read the questions, Glazer, then you would know he'd already kind of brought that up.
Well, obviously. But, yeah.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and jump to question two then. So Greyjoy has the only other positive qualification ratio with a measly 0.09. But they're also in third place for field cuts and winners.
Yeah, Pinch of Patter just came out this month. Relax. Like, if you're looking at 2 months before Pinch of Patter, okay, you were looking at some weird Drowned God stuff that no longer really exists. It's okay. It's there. It's just not as good. And then, like, all of a sudden, Pinch of Powder comes out. People took 0.2 seconds, went, hey, Raider from Pike is a card. And all of a sudden, Greyjoy goes defeated. Congrats, Issyan.
So you think they've got a good chance at unseating the two current Titans?
I think those are the three houses that matter. I don't know which of the three is better. I think Targ's probably best if you can figure out how to answer both Stark and Greyjoy, but I think most Targ builds that can answer one Stark.
I think Targ's still kind of the undisputed champion. Oh. HRD Marine is just so good.
Oh, there's one other thing that matters, I guess. There's your, Nico's coming, right?
Right.
Yeah. Like, so there's whatever, bullshit
Alliance
cohort deck that he shows up with and that he gives to his boys. That has to matter just because he's so damn good.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to assume there's going to be quite a bit of Alliance cohort in general. We're going to see some Tyrell Dragon cohort, which is so good. Yeah. Just through and through. It's a solid, solid deck.
I mean, it could other ways, right? Like, I've been told there's a Lannister version of that. I don't really believe that. But, there's definitely the Targ Alliance cohorts and so on and so forth.
What?
Yeah.
Come on. Kingslayer every day, right?
there's versions of that, but whether or not they're good or competitive enough to keep up, that's really what the question is. And I think Targ HRD Marine, the burn is just real. It is hard to combat. It's strong when you're drawing that many cards. If you don't have answers for locations like that, if you don't have answers for that draw, you're going to have a hard time.
Do the Alliance cohort decks just not beat it?
I think they have a hard time with their
plot deck.
It depends. It depends on what they're running. I think STF helps a lot, obviously, against burn. But that said, you're seeing some Targs go fealty. You're seeing some Targs, I'm seeing some Targs anyway, running tourney grounds in order to try and combat that STF.
Just to slip that out there for the listeners, STF is...
Sorry, supporting the faith.
There we go. Okay.
I'm so used to referring to it as that now because I've been talking about it for like a month straight. So it's becoming more and more common in plot decks. Tyrell doesn't have to worry about that gold generation because of their scheming septons. So if they have to use some gold, they can run double supporting the faith in a Tyrell Wars deck. And, and just create whatever gold they need. So, anyway, all that to say, I think Targ burn's extremely strong. I think it's probably going to be pretty overrepresented in the meta for Worlds. I think we're going to see a lot of it. My estimate for Targ as a house is going to be around 25%.
Okay.
I think it's easily most represented.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Easily. And it'll go Targ, then Stark, then Greyjoy, then everything else will have a spattering.
I agree.
Probably next Tyrell, I'd assume, because that's the easiest cohort house.
After Greyjoy, I would say either Tyrell, and then I think fifth is going to be Free Folk.
I could see that. I don't think Martell Lannister so better exist.
It is. I really wish that we could separate out Free Folk from everything else, so that we can really get good numbers on that, and not have it skew the data one way or another. With everyone saying Bera Free Folk or something. yeah, I would have really liked that to be different, so that we can actually get good. Like, it screws up all of our statistics. It screws up all of our data, which is frustrating.
Okay, well, in that case, then let's go ahead and move on officially to question three, which is about those other houses. So. I mean, currently in that time frame for the last couple of months, they've honestly all been pretty represented in the field, like somewhere 10 to 15% for all of them, pretty similarly. but they're all setting at negative qualification ratios. So, I mean, especially with this last restricted list update, like, you really expect Tyrell to keep, you know, running in that next spot, or is that going to scare people away? What about Martell? It's still not that far back that everybody was all over Martell.
No, man, Martell doesn't exist.
You think they don't exist at all?
I mean, I think if you'd like to win, you can't bring. I wish that wasn't the case.
I think I agree to an extent. I mean, he calls it thinking helps a lot. It makes, you know, like, again, supporting the faith, like I was talking about, it makes that a really, really strong plot for them. Yeah.
But Martell doesn't want to play supporting the faith as a general.
Well, I think they do. I think they do in the sense with, he calls it thinking, and then Water Gardens.
Exactly what
yeah.
I
mean. Yeah, Water Gardens lets them, you know, do whatever sorts of tricks they want on that turn, and shut off whatever their tricks they want to shut off, which I think is beneficial. I think that's really helpful.
It's good. It's just not as good as you'd like it to be.
Plus, I mean, they've also got, you know, Indoran's name.
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
So, I mean, they can still get their gold for that turn. That said, power generation's hard with them outside of Doran's game. I'm seeing a lot more Hand's Judgment right now, just because of burn and all the other stuff. So it's more easily cancelable. Getting the power is hard. You know, even Martell Wolf has a hard time with burn. And so even attrition decks aren't doing great.
I could be burned like an extremely high percent of the time, Martell Wolf.
Oh, really?
With one exception.
Okay.
Motherfucking King Plot ruins that game. You have a king. I don't. The game's just over. Like, because I can't afford to fall behind on tempo to that extent. But like before, right. King Plot was in that deck. Like, I beat it at Gen Con. I beat it all. Like, I was.
Yeah, but now that Hisdar's a thing.
Well, it wasn't even Hisdar. Like, because Hisdar was played for like a good month and a half before King Plot started fighting its way into those decks. And like, yeah. Like Hisdar alone was annoying. But like, whatever. You bash that shit away. All he did was really cause overextension. And like occasionally fuck up my others, but like as soon as it became a king plot, like, because now you have time to find your dupes, you have time to just like get like 5-6 power that I can't really do anything about. It makes me very
right.
Like, there's not a super good answer to it, because like it annoys me. Like, what really I think what bugs me more than all the like cool toys Tar got, it's how many cool toys they got that make them go fast. Because one of the very few things that kept burn in check was always how slow you play.
Right. Yeah, because, you know, that was the whole thing, is you had to burn down their board, kill them over and over and over again until you're the only thing left standing.
Right. Now you don't have to do that because you have so many quick ways to grab power that, like, there's no real downside to that burn. And I feel like that's not the most balanced thing in the world.
Right. And I know Drogon can be, like, I know we're going to talk about, you know, kind of the new pack a little bit. And Drogon, I think, for Targ, is incredibly strong. You know, it's easily controlled out of icon control, but holy crap.
Like, yeah, it's just, it busts any number of decks. Like, it single-handedly beats a lot of decks. Like, you ambush in a Drogon and a lot of decks just immediately fold. They've lost the game. I feel like that's an interesting design decision. Might be the first one.
I never even see I don't think I ever even really see him get ambushed in. I mean, I can definitely see that with Hisdar.
I've occasionally ambushed him just to like fuck with people. I mean, I feel like he's the first card since Mace that, like, if you put it down and your opponent doesn't answer it within a turn or two, the game's over.
Yeah.
For a different reason. But like, just like if you have him and Drogo eating through, like, without any other real trick, you're eating through three cards a turn. And that's just silly.
Well, and being like, if you have him and Khal Drogo out in Plaza of Pride.
Yeah. Well, and the real problem, I think, or another real problem is a dragon is no slave is so good.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, you're Renly, if before you get that attachment, your duped Renly is just like, goodbye. I had a dragon is no slave, and now it's within range. Like, it's It's a lot, and it's really strong. He reminds me, I think this is Roy's thing that he's saying, like, he's a better Gregor.
Yes. Gregor was. Yeah, Roy was talking about that in the review. Except now Roy, he's not random. I'll take the strength reduction to not have to make a random pull.
And not have to worry about saves and all the other benefits.
Right. It's just,
and like, hey, you took away his icon, I guess I'm just going to drag this turn.
Yep.
So.
Well, okay. Maybe that awkwardly sends us to item number 4, because that sounded like everyone was just kind of dejectedly sighing about that particular card. So let's change our meta process a little bit. What about?
Oh, can I just I want to suggest a card that everyone should be running three of it.
That is definitely going to wind up being a later question.
That's a later question.
Damn it. Okay.
it's almost like Aaron would really love these questions if he had read them beforehand.
What's the point? You're going to read them to me on a podcast.
But you're trying to jump the gun.
But then I'd know what my answers are going to be, and I'd know better than your answer. So, like, no one wants that.
He keeps being like a question and a half further down the list.
Right.
Okay, so let's hit on the last one I've got here about the field, then. So, do we have a dark horse out there out of the other three factions that stands any kind of chance right now? I mean,
there are definitely four other factions, but okay.
What? I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. You said other three factions. That was like, but we've only... but we talked about... Well, I guess we talked about four, but one of them was Free Folk, so there's five other factions.
Well, at this point, on my questions, I've got Stark, Targ, Greyjoy, Tyrell, Martell. There's five. And then there's three left out of the eight, right?
I don't think Martell exists.
That's what you said earlier when I started to bring them up.
still don't think they exist. Sorry.
They are at least in the most middle of the pack area at the moment, along with Tyrell. Now, I mean, the middle of the pack in looking at this kind of time frame is still pretty bad compared to the top of the pack. But if you look even further down here at the bottom, you've got Baera, Lannister, and Night's Watch. I think Baera and Lannister are pretty widely panned as being, you know, the bottom by the community. And they're currently at qualification of 0.64 negative and 0.53 negative, respectively. But Night's Watch is actually even doing worse than Lannister at 0.6 negative, again, I should say. Like, they're about as far negative as Targ is positive.
I think Baera is kind of a sleeper faction right now a little bit. I think Baera cohort, Baera Rose cohort. I think you could do Baera Dragon cohort. I think we're going to see a lot of that at Worlds, and people aren't expecting it.
It's a really frustrating deck. The Rose cohort is what knocked me out at the front.
I was going to ask if
so, that like, pops
up. It made top four at Worlds, or at Nationals, too. It made top four at Nationals for a reason.
Like, there's very... and, like, you know what I've never seen literally anywhere? What the fuck happened to Jim's Crossing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that Night's Watch Crossing, that was really good. Like, I don't know anyone who played it. And, like, I feel like we played everything. That's just overlooked. I don't even know how good it is. Because I genuinely think I just forgot about it until now. I'm like you said, top four at Nationals. I was like, huh.
Yeah. Well, and kind of sort of acknowledged that published in his tourney write-up. Like, wow, this is pretty out of left field, and everyone's going to write that off, aren't they? And then everyone forgot about it.
They did, because
that's exactly what happened.
Because I completely did. You rip, like, how much have you tested it? Just be honest, because I haven't tested it at all. It's too late now.
Oh no, I haven't tested against it at all. I don't expect any Night's Watch Crossing, and the main reason I don't expect it is because of Targ. I think Targ right now with Marine can eat that for lunch. I think it can.
Fair enough.
So I don't expect to see it getting up at a higher win rate. I don't see it, you know, kind of at the top of the cut, or at the top prior cut.
Yeah, I think Baera is most likely your sleeper.
I think Bear is the sleeper too. I think there's a Bear Dragon deck out there, Bear Dragon cohort that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, I don't think it's even hard to build. Which is
let's be real. The Dragon Banner is not hard to build at all right now.
A lot of good non-loyal stuff.
Yeah, there is.
Like, it doesn't even need to be cohort, to be perfectly honest.
It doesn't.
It doesn't hurt. But it doesn't need it.
I think out of Bera, cohort is nice.
Well, yeah, because it gets you the king attachment that lets you draw cards, which seems important when you're running Queen's card.
Yep.
Yeah. That wouldn't shock me if that one world. Like, I think Bera has a better shot than Martell.
I do, too. I would tend to agree.
I think they might have a better shot than Tyrell.
Oh, wow.
That, I think, is questionable.
So it's not...
Renly's just so good with Queen's card.
So my basic thought is it's close, and, like, Greyjoy's in the meta, which means Valor is in the meta. And...
Thank God.
Right, that's important. But, like, now everyone's running Kings, right?
Yes.
So if you're running Kings, now Renly's a risky investment.
Until they milk their own Renly.
I mean...
So they can save him.
Sure, but like at that point you can just have them.
Technically possible.
Well, no, so what they do is they milk him before the Valor, they save him with the dupe, and then they go into the cohort turn, take off their milk, and get him his
renown. But like, I'm not Valoring when he's milked.
Oh jeez.
Perfect. Then Tyrell just wins because they have so much better strength on the board.
I'm not super stressed about that because, like,
it's a long shot. I know
it's cute.
Greyjoy is like, you don't have so much more strength. That's kind of the point of Greyjoy, right? Like, they also,
except for on the entry, well,
but they also don't have to kill him to just return him to hand all the time and annoy you. Remember, a zero cost of that stupid attachment is really dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that should probably somehow be around.
Are you talking about Queen's Guard?
No.
What are you talking about?
Return to hand. I don't... Lucas's card.
Oh, Pinch.
Yeah. Zero cost Pinch of Powder.
With the Raider. Yeah.
Yeah.
You do have to have the Raider out. I mean, there is that. You have to draw them both, but, you know, two card combos, not that.
No, it's not hard to pull off. And, like, you've got Asha to go search for pieces, and, like, yeah.
I mean,
if you see that on the board, you just don't let him win by five as much as possible.
I mean, sure, but you're spending your entire game trying to play defensive. Like, it changes your whole game in a way that I don't think necessarily benefits you. Well, that I know doesn't benefit you, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's just a different way to play. I think people have to be careful about it. They have to recognize that it exists. You can only play around it so much. And it's the same thing as Dracarys. You can only play around it so much.
I don't know if it's better than Dracarys because, like, they're both two card combos, right?
Right.
But, like, but this one doesn't kill. This one's just so much more repeatable than the card.
Right.
Repeatable is huge. But there's also, like, it's the activation's a little different. Like, like Dracarys, you're kind of daring your opponent to walk into it, or you get to keep doing what you're doing. Like Pinch of Powder, you're doing what you're doing no matter what. You're daring them to stop you doing that, I think is much more proactive.
And if you're smart at using the power, you can then do the exact same thing with the entry.
Yeah.
With, like, doing it twice per round or is just...
Right. With the same one, even if you have two in hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very.
Two in hand, chew through their dupes. And,
It's very, very silly.
It is.
I don't think that's necessarily the best deck because, yo, it's real hard to win by five when Tar keeps burning all your shit, right? But, like.
Right, exactly.
But, like, I feel like that's going to keep Tyrell heavily in check because I expect a fair amount of it.
See, okay. I expect it out of Tyrell too, though. Because Tyrell can win Intrigue so heavily, and they have the gold to pay for it, so.
So, I'm just going to be blunt. Testing shows it's not quite as good at Tyrell.
Really? Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
Okay. You know where it works really good well? Not going to see it at Worlds, but Lannister loves that shit. Like, they have no problem.
I just don't see Lana. Yeah, I don't see
Hey, look, it's not going to happen. They just can't.
They haven't gotten enough.
Like, good luck stopping two intrigue challenges from Cersei at 6 strength plus whatever else, right?
Okay, well, this does kind of, go figure, already kind of answer the next question I had lined up. But we're going to go ahead and ask it anyway and see if Aaron 100% sticks to that answer. So my next three questions kind of turn to questions about specific cards. So the first one is, out of the newest cards that we're going to have available for this, so what do you expect is going to be the single card out of the latest pack in Daznak's Pit to make the biggest splash? Is it for sure a Pinch of Powder, or is anything else competing for the biggest Drogon, splash of worlds?
Right, like it's Pinch or Drogon. And like a lot of what Drogon does is if you see Drogon first, your Targ-on-Targ matchup that you're going to have to win gets an awful lot easier.
Right. It really does. I mean, you have to either, if you're playing, you know, burn on the other side, you have to burn down Drogon and you have to spend, you know, 2 to 3 events to do that.
And if you don't have those fast enough and they have Drogon, they've won.
Yeah.
Have a cool day. Bye.
I don't see Indazinak's Pit being as good as everyone was kind of expecting.
No, I think it's too soon.
Yeah, I really wondered about that one.
Yeah, I've seen some people testing with it. I've looked at it myself.
Also, bugged on Iron Throne, so that doesn't help.
What's that?
Bugged on Iron Throne, so that doesn't
help. Oh, didn't realize that. Oh, is it bugged
on there right now?
I don't know if it's bugged if you pay it with gold, but I've never tried to pay it with gold. But it won't let me play it with Hisdar.
Oh.
Right, yes, it is broken with Hisdar. That is true. We've just manually resolved it personally.
We have in private testing, but like that's why you're not going to see randos do it, right? Like because like
right,
it's straight up not working at that point.
That said, I don't really test. I test very little with randos unless I'm just trying to see if a concept works.
we do lots of concepts with randos, and then we just like I think the Marine is just reasonably fun. So, like, I just screw around with it sometimes.
I hate Marines so much.
I mean, I play 80% Martell Wolf on Iron Throne, then occasionally I just throw other decks that are at least a little bit controlling.
I agree. Drogon, absolutely. Pinch of Powder, just absolutely nuts. Very, very strong, obviously, especially out of Greyjoy. And in the same vein, I love both of the Greyjoy cards that came out. Mm. I love them immensely.
Which is the other one? Which, I remember the location. What's the other one?
Iron Victory Screw.
Very good.
Yeah. Going, getting a warship location, put it in play if it's Iron Victory, but otherwise just put it in your hand. Yes, please. That's it. We're enabling the warship deck. I love that. I want to see more of it.
It's going to be real sad when that box comes out.
I'm so excited.
Like, I mean, you shouldn't be, because like, now we know the meta for the next 3 months.
Yeah, but see, I was like, when 2.0 came out, I was a Greyjoy loyalist most of the first cycle. I left Greyjoy. But...
Sure, Greyjoy is going to be good. You're going to make a good Greyjoy deck. We're going to have it, and then we're going to have a good Targ deck, and we're going to have a good Stark deck, and that's going to be the whole. And then if something comes out of left field at Worlds or Stalic, we'll have that then, and that's going to be the meta. For 3 months.
Unless, fingers crossed, FFG steps in with another restricted list update specifically to shake
things right up.
That would be amazing, and I hope so.
Fingers crossed.
But like,
Danny sounded and like, receptive to the possibility when we had him on.
I really believed that was going to happen until I saw this restricted list. And now I feel like if they give us another restricted list, they're going to be like, well, you know what? We should restrict Martell.
I think they will recognize. No, I think they will. I get what you're saying. I see where you're going with that, but I think they'll recognize that Targ is dominating the meta right now. And
you know, I would have thought that. I would have thought that 3 weeks ago.
Sure,
but I was clearly wrong.
Yeah, they were responding a little late to something that was no longer an issue.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
So this one will hit Martell and those were good at Gen Con. So man, those will
you've got to move in the wrong direction here, dude. They're gonna at least catch up to U.S. Nationals. They're gonna get out there ahead of that Night's Watch crossing deck and tank it.
I don't believe anyone at FFG's knows that Nationals happened. They don't seem real up on things. They're probably still trying to figure out how to schedule that. Ah, sorry.
We'll see what happens. All right, before we get into awkward territory with that line of reasoning, let's move on to our second card-based question. So, I think there's still people kind of experimenting with cards from the cycle, kind of re-examining early stuff in light of cards that have come out later in the cycle. You know, see things like Bowels of Casterly Rock plus later now Pinch of Powder, for instance. I think that's a good thing. That's a good sign about the cycle. But what card out of this do you think is most likely to just be a trap that people should just give up on now for Worlds? It's not worth it. There's not enough time to try and actually make it work for Worlds. Yeah. Out of not specifically just this last pack, but out of like the last few, out of this cycle. Is there something that jumps out as a trap to you?
Free Folk.
Really?
I think Free Folk as a concept. I think it can be strong. I don't think it's there yet. I don't think it can win. I don't think it can. It's a one trick pony. I was telling you guys that kind of a little bit earlier. I don't see it. I think maybe one of the Free Folk decks will make a cut.
Interesting.
It won't win.
I don't think it'll win either, but I think if you don't think you're good and you just like to win some games and perhaps make some noise, Free Folk's decent.
Sure.
I think New Wall.
Yeah.
New Wall, like, just keep it. I don't think it can
win. Well, it can't win because, I mean, New Vic. New Vic just kneels out your wall unless you're using it earlier. Well,
New Vic, between New Vic and the Targ non-limited.
Yeah.
Like, you're just fighting. And it doesn't really like just Targ's dealing with speed.
All over anyway.
And, like,
speed's going to be all over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're now at a point where Stark can just seed their discard pile as much as they damn want with Skagos. And, like, right. That's an awful lot of the field that's just telling you to go F yourself.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. The new wall, and frankly, I hate playing against it so much. It's just an annoying deck to play against. I see that online. I'm just like, I'm going to spend the next 45 minutes of my life doing something that I hate doing, playing against this
deck. I don't think I hate new wall. I think what I hate more than anything is all of the different tech they put in that involves pillage. If New Wall required you to discard it from hand or play, I have no problem with it. It's that it's discard from deck, which you can't really interact with. That makes
especially Crane's Crown. Man, I cannot talk tonight. It's almost like I've been drinking while we've been talking. Queen's Crown. So, there we go.
So, I've got a question about the card that I think belongs restricted more than any other. Do really advanced players start cutting King Plot because everyone's got to play it? Because everyone's got to be playing King.
I think that's an interesting concept. I'm curious because everyone's playing Kings now, so do you play King's Plot? I don't think we're going to see as much of it as we did at Nationals.
That's my assumption, too. I also think, I think the Rush keeps it, though, so you have, and you still have to run Kings for it. But I think Rush 100% keeps it because, you just have to see your deck, your king sooner because you're playing Rush.
Right. I agree.
It wouldn't shock me if Rush won Worlds. I don't think it's the leader of the Rush clubhouse, but, it could just, it runs hot and it's just thanks for coming. Have a nice day.
Right. I don't disagree. I mean, it's strong for a reason.
Okay.
It's fast for a reason. and it only got faster. It only got faster with the new restricted list because, when you're breaking up Breaking Ties and Flea Bottom, you've got a lot less Breaking Ties in the meta.
Okay, here's an interesting hypothetical question
for you. Do enough people listen to this podcast and or listen to your views enough that questioning the efficacy of running the King plot then leads to them not running King plot at Worlds, which then means running it is more effective?
With you,
I clearly cannot choose the class in front of me.
No, but the question is whether running it is more effective, like, because you have to run kings whether you're running it or not, because you have to, like, you have to assume you're going to see it, right? The question isn't whether you run kings or not. If you can run kings, you run kings. The question is, am I getting enough of an advantage out of king plot, since everyone knows they have to be running kings literally until that card is restricted to still run it?
Right, but I mean, what Will, I think what you're trying to say here is, do we have enough of an influence on the meta to make it seem as though, you know, now people shouldn't be running King's plot because everyone's running King's anyway, so it's not that useful, and thus then those of us in the know can then run the King's plot because it will be more useful for us? No, I don't think we have that sort of influence on anyone at all. We are not that important.
Yeah, I didn't really think that this was far-reaching enough, but I thought it was an interesting hypothetical, at least. Oh, man.
Although, if there's not a lot of King's plot at Worlds, I will now take credit. And you see how I just made more King's plot be played?
Yeah, exactly.
With that one sentence?
Well done. Well, I am going to throw out one card, though. I'm going to wade into things on traps, though. One card I do not want to see more of out there. I don't care what Jesse Carpenter tells you. Do not believe him. Painted Dogs is not the card that Klansmen needed to be competitive. Okay?
I've only lost one game out of like seven with Klansmen. I don't think it can beat Rush, though. It matters a little bit in the meta. Like, it also doesn't run any kings, so, you know, combine those two. And I'm not
now we're going back to whether you run king plots or not. Oh, gosh, this is getting complicated.
No. I don't care if it runs king plots. I don't
know whether your opponents do. King if you plot, just lowered their odds of running it, which now means the Klansmen are better. Oh, it's a vicious cycle.
Well, we know what Jesse's taking.
Yeah.
We know what Jesse's taking.
There you go.
If Jesse wasn't in long lenses, he'd be taking Klansmen. Just for the record, like, he would 100%.
Maybe we can get him to play Klansmen in Melee at least.
So I had to promise him if he didn't bring Klansmen to Worlds, I would take Klansmen to a tournament next year.
Nice.
So
nice.
So I'll be playing Klansmen soon.
I just like the interactions with Klansmen. It's fun. It's interesting. It's you know, it's
one of those 4 to 5 decks that aren't Martell Wolf that I play. Random, what has control elements in this game? There's not that many of them.
Nope.
And now you've made me want to go play a Klansmen deck, so there goes my next couple of days of testing.
Okay, well, here we go. Last card question. So in various points of the game's history, the meta has been very defined by certain cards, say Flea Bottom or Mace Tyrell, that sort of thing, Valor Morghulis. So what would your call be on the most single meta-defining card out of Worlds? I think Marine might be my choice.
It's one of the target ones. So it might be Queen's Guard, because that'll be in the Marine decks
and in the
Cohort deck.
Yeah, but, and probably in a lot of Melee decks.
Dragon deck, yeah.
Keep acknowledging that.
Did Will cut out again? Because all of a sudden I heard...
Good one.
Good. He cut out a little, yeah, but he's still there.
Damn it. What a shame. All right. The card that should define the meta, the card that everyone should be running three of that I tried to say earlier and got yelled at, is Beck.
Begging Brothers is, I think it's in the, other than Greyjoy. I don't think it goes in Greyjoy.
They've already got Vince. Drowned God Disciple.
They've got, yeah. You can just say Vince. Yeah, they've got the Drowned God Fanatic.
Dang it. Too many Drown God cars.
Yes.
Just call it. There really are. I hate that. But also, just call it Vince.
I did. And then I thought, Vince. No, I should say the real name for the listeners. And then I said the wrong one.
Sure. I don't know it's Vince.
And then you still said the wrong one.
But yeah.
It's okay.
So though. Everywhere but for Ajoy, it should be a 3-0.
I agree. There's too many character abilities that you need to cancel. I mean, and being able to cancel Vince with it is nice.
I mean,
so.
Being able to cancel Vince, being able to stop a Victarion stand when that becomes important, being
stop a 1-1.
Yeah, that's always awesome. Being able to, being able to, like, say you discarded those cards for Kohor for nothing, or that you brought Aegon out and now I can kill him. And can't have whatever you wanted, like, or just trapping that shit in shadows, any of the above.
Yep, I agree. Canceling that Robert Strong, canceling, I mean, so many things. Yeah, Baking Brothers is one of those cards that is it's a defensive card, but it is extremely beneficial.
The meta just requires you to run it, I think. Like, I don't know of a house that can avoid running it, except maybe Greyjoy. Even in Greyjoy, like, I might be like, you know what'd be nice? More cancel.
More cancel. Yeah. More cancel's always good. Absolutely. But, I mean, in some ways, can't you just get that out of Nightmares, though? For the most part?
In Greyjoy?
No, I'm saying in general. I agree with you on Baking Brothers. It's solid. It's very strong.
The problem is,
And it cancels Shadows. And it cancels that come into play effect. So that's the benefit of that.
Nightmares doesn't do what I want it to do against Targ.
Against Targ?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
It's like, I don't know their hand, so I don't really know exactly when they want a Marine. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, like, unless they've just you win or you died, I don't know when I want to try and do Marine. I don't know what they have in their hand, so I don't know when I want to try and hit Star. Like, if I can just beg Brother that, and, like, I still have the body, I still have more cancel. It's significantly better as a general. Look, again, like, this is a both scenario.
Yeah. Like, no, I definitely agree with you. I understand.
I just think Big Brother is better right now. Because, like, I feel like we're in a fairly event-like meta.
We are. Absolutely, I agree. I think that's part of why Martell is feeling so rough right now, too, because they are such an event-heavy deck.
Yeah. I mean, so they're an event-heavy deck, and they could probably work around that. But, like, A, being an event-heavy deck screws up your setup, and having a screwed-up setup in a rush meta is not ideal. And then, like, if you start off at all behind, you're trying to use your character abilities to combine with those events to come back, and then your character abilities get totally shut off for a turn. Like, there's three plots that see a lot of play right now. Screw Martell. Like, King, Barring, and Supporting are all really annoying for Martell.
Yeah.
So, that's a lot.
As far as talking about the most meta-defining cards, I know we talked a lot about the Targ cards in general. And I think the Targ cards in general are pretty meta-defining. But as far as plots are concerned, I think by far the best plot, and the plot that probably shines the best, Forced March.
Ooh, Forced March is huge. I halfway wondered if you were going to throw Supporting Thief out there.
I think it's good. I think it does a lot of work. I don't think it's as meta-defining. I think a lot of people have been talking about it. I think it's definitely going to be seen in a lot of decks. But I think Forced March is by far one of the strongest plots in the game right now.
So, I think it's excellent. I think it's you win or you die.
You win or you die?
Oh, wow.
I've been so lackluster on that plot. Like, I like it. It's good. I hate if you don't win that turn and then you're going to the next turn with no cards. It hurts. Sure. Targ doesn't give a at all.
Greyjoy tends not to either. They just don't have any cards.
Well, and they regularly don't have cards.
Like, it's like, oh no, I have to
chuck
a card.
Yeah.
Like, yep. I think the meta-defining card, the meta-defining plot is King of the North. I think the others are just really good and really important. I think the meta defined a lot.
That was the main one you guys kept coming back to talking about.
It's the one that has kept Rush relevant.
Yeah.
Like if you go to start against Stark turn two, they see their pieces in a king and you don't, they can play that, the game's over.
Depending on the board state, but
yeah, they see their pieces. Like, right? They've got a dude king, their stupid king attachment, Sansa, and stupid face, renowned for Sansa. They play Omno when the game's over. They've got 9 power.
Except of Mordain. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
I said stupid face. That's what I meant.
Okay.
But yeah, like.
I'm curious. I'm excited, man. I'm excited for 2 weeks from now, you know? I'm looking forward to this.
For 1 week from now.
Oh, well, yeah. When sure.
Team Martell wins Thronstoberfest.
Well, I hope you do. I definitely
just because I don't think
put some picks on you guys just be, when I
just because I don't think we can win Worlds doesn't mean I don't think, like, because I don't think we don't have the T1iest of T1 decks. Doesn't mean I don't think we can beat a lot of other houses T2.
It's a totally different meta, you know, for Thronstoberfest versus, you know, the style is totally different in a war meta than a you know, joust. So
I enjoy these tournaments more than I do a standard joust turn.
I totally agree. 100%. Even though I was playing for Team Stark and we got our asses literally handed to us, you know, on our wolf heads, you know, served on a silver platter, it was the most fun I've had at a tournament.
It's unbelievably fun to be, like, to have the whole team thing going.
Yep. As long as you have a good team.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you could be Team Lannister at first over the Invisible right now, right? Like, what do you get? Want to ask your question 11, Will?
Yeah, here we go. Question 11. This is where we bring it full circle then back to the quote that we opened with. So you're prepping for Worlds. You're getting ready here. What are the important wardrobe choices for an event like Worlds? And again, here's one. Dustin tried to skip ahead on me way back
then. Not on purpose, man. I didn't know about your gotcha question.
I didn't even have it written down.
You want to take that, Glazer?
I mean, you wear whatever your team shirt is or your podcast shirt. And if you don't have a team or a podcast, do you even Thrones?
These days, right? I know.
At this point, most of the player pool in the U.S. is on some kind of Thrones podcast, right?
Well, and I think that makes that would make for an interesting sort of question or episode too, talking about the fact that everybody seemed to team up. A lot of people have teamed up. A lot of people have, you know, been on podcasts more regularly. But the team aspect is something that's changed, I think, in the last year.
Yeah.
Gee, I don't know what might have happened at Gen Con that made everyone suddenly feel like they had to be in a big team.
I think it was before Gen Con though, a little bit.
It wasn't. There were teams, but they weren't nearly as organized.
We saw nationals with the DC meta, you know, last year.
Oh well,
yeah,
but DC
they have always DC been a team.
Sure,
at least
DC is what inspired. But DC is what inspired what originally New York was, which evolved into Lances once Jesse and John became eight members. We're like, well, can't call ourselves New York anymore.
Well, so that's kind of what I meant, though, is that I think Nationals last year in 2017 kind of spawned the whole team concept. Well, and not spawned, because, I mean, or obviously there's been teams before that and since. But, yeah, it encouraged it. I think people saw the benefit of doing it, and I think it's proliferated, yes, absolutely, from there, more so than before. I find that interesting. But, anyway, wardrobes, yes. You know, you wear your day one, you wear your team shirt or your podcast shirt, and day two, you wear your superstitious, you make the cut and you win the tournament shirt.
I will be wearing a snake costume.
Wearing a what?
Snake costume.
Like a boa constrictor, snake costume. Like a cobra, like that kind of snake?
You will see. I mean, everyone will have seen by the time this goes live. By the time this goes live. But you will see. Team Martell.
I am excited.
Okay.
Snake costumes, baby.
All right.
Sand snakes. All right.
Keeping my eyes peeled.
Interesting.
Okay, well, shall we do a little props and slops?
No.
No? Whew. Jeez.
You phrased it as a question. You made a mistake. Episode's over, guys. Night.
I declare that we're doing props and slops because I attended a comic convention, a little local one that a buddy was putting on. His first attempt at running a comic convention last weekend. So I went to that and actually picked up a good pile of some like early 2000s Morrison stuff I hadn't read before, a lot of Seven Soldiers of Victory and some spinoff miniseries and stuff. But what I'm really excited about is I finally gave in and picked up the first two volumes of the Marvel reissue of Miracle Man by Alan Moore. And so I'm finally giving in and reading that. I don't know why I held off on reading something with such a huge reputation in the comic industry for so long, but it is really good. Really good. And the Marvel reissue with the recolors and stuff is awesome.
Very cool.
While we're on comics, I'm going to slop DC Universe.
Because it's DC. I would understand
if that was
the case.
No, there's the DC Universe app.
Yeah, I've heard it's...
Where they're like, you can get all our TV shows and other stuff. And, like, I got it functionally because I like comic books. And, A, the comic books are extremely poorly organized. And, B, they're just missing crazy amounts of comic books. Don't promise me basically all the DC comics and then be like, nuh-uh. Like, now I'm like, why do I have this shit? I don't, like... And, like, they only have it as a phone app right now. So I can't even, like, I have a smart TV, and I can't even download it on my smart TV so I can, like, show Brave and the Bold to my kid. Nope, I'd have to watch on my phone. Thanks, DC Universe.
They don't have, like, an Xbox or PlayStation app yet?
I don't know, but they definitely don't have an Amazon Fire TV app.
I was about to ask if you can Chromecast it, but then now you clarified you've got Amazon, so, man.
It's super annoying, and I super don't like them anymore. Although they're DC, so I don't. Oh, also slops to Marvel. I don't know if anybody noticed, but they totally fired a Star Wars writer for being a dick to alt-right people. And like, hey, everyone should be a dick to alt-right people, and you shouldn't get fired for it.
Yeah. Let's be honest. Chuck Wendig deserved to be fired for just being a bad writer about a year
Fair,
and a half to two
fine.
Years before that.
I don't know anything about his writing. I don't care if he has, like, none of that bothers me, but if you're going to fire him for being a dick to the alt-right, you suck.
Yeah. No, that's a kind of terrible reason, but did you, well, I guess you didn't try to check out the new EU novels. He had a trilogy that he was writing there. What was the first one called? Aftershock or something like that? Man, sure. I tried, and it is so bad. It's just bad writing.
Sure.
I gave up.
Okay. Slops to his writing, props to his politics.
Seems fair.
I don't care about his politics. I don't think general dislike of Nazis is political.
It shouldn't be. That should be your default for everyone as humanity is concerned.
Props to Sentinels. The app's 4 years old as we record this. And
you're still using it?
Hell yeah. They finally released the Void Guard. So I got four new characters today. So, like, if we didn't have this podcast, that's what I was going to do tonight. So I have a pile of grading waiting. There's the bug that bit me. Now it's dead.
Uh-huh. I'm going to go ahead and give props to my wife for, not that she's ever going to listen to this, but she did a really very cool, very sweet thing this last weekend. I miss fall. I live in Texas. We don't have fall
or
down
winter,
here.
Right?
No, we really don't. We have hot and not hot. It's getting into not hot season, but I miss fall, and I'm originally from Nebraska, and in Nebraska it's fall, and they actually have had a snow just recently. But one of the things that really marks fall for me is pumpkin patches. Vala's pumpkin patch is huge in Nebraska. Yeah. What's that, Will?
Oh, just agreeing about pumpkin patches.
Yeah, I love them. Vala's pumpkin patch in between Lincoln and Omaha and Nebraska is huge. I would go to it at least once a season. Love it very, very much. It just the smells, everything about it, you know, the people, the pumpkin cannons, just all of it. It's a blast. And I've missed it. I've missed it for years because, you know, we're down here in Texas. So, and we visit at Thanksgiving, which is well after pumpkin festival sort of season thing. And so this last weekend, I come home from work and she has made a mini Vala's pumpkin patch on our table in our breakfast nook. She bought hay and put bales of hay out and painted a sign saying Vala's pumpkin patch and put a bunch of pumpkins out and some you know, Halloween decorations, because they always have a little bit of a haunted area at the pumpkin patch, and jellies and jams, and made candied apples and homemade kettle corn, and you know, very like fancy cream soda and root beers, and our Vala's tin glasses. And it was very, very sweet. It was very thoughtful. And she definitely deserves all the props for that.
That sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Kind of related note. I forget, which city are you actually in? I know, I should know, but now I can't recall. Houston.
I'm outside of Houston. I'm in what's called Lamarck.
Okay. Just wondering. Last year, Kristen and I.
Is it called that because that's its name?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, yes. It's just everything around here to me is Houston. It's all Houston. An hour away from Houston is still Houston.
Big city will do that.
Yeah.
If you've not gone, I do recommend. Last year, Kristen and I went down to Dallas to their botanical garden and the huge pumpkin patch display thing down there. That was super rad. I know it's not super close to you, but
there's definitely a lot of stuff to do. It's just not the same, man. It's not the same. But
slots to Roy Rogers.
Ooh.
Because according to Will of our team, our former team Stark from Thrones War, he talked over me when I propped "How to Invent Everything" by Ryan North, which is freaking phenomenal, and everyone should go buy it.
Okay, I'll have to check that out.
You definitely should. Hey, it's the library. The library should order it.
Hey, absolutely. Talk to the library. Librarians are
amazing. I am talking to the library, am I not?
I mean, you are, but I'm kind of down in, my library's down in Galveston. It's a little far away from you.
I'm just talking to the only library. The only library I'm on a first name basis with.
Librarians are amenable people. I'm pretty sure you can get your local librarian to purchase it.
I absolutely will. But you should. Your library should stop.
What book was
How
it?
How to Invent Everything.
How to Invent Everything. Let's see if we have it. While you finish up the podcast, I'll check and see if you have it in my library.
Good luck.
If he doesn't have it, his podcast is in the danger zone.
Yep. And he'll have to close the chapter